My guest at this time is former South Carolina Senator and current Heritage Foundation President and CEO, Jim DeMint. He is also the author of the brand new book, Falling in Love with America Again. And Senator, it's always good to have you with us. Thank you.
Greg, thanks for having me back and giving me a chance to talk about this wonderful country that we all love.
Well, let's start with what you mean by falling in love with America. Do you mean the America the founders created, the America we currently have, the America we hope to create, or all of the above?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, we know we're all blessed to be Americans, and the more we think about it, I think the more we realize what a special place that we've been blessed to live in. And we're all still in love with the American ideals, the American dream. But a lot of people have fallen out of love with the government that's running the place and a lot of the divisions that are being created in our country. And what we're pointing out in the book is one of the reasons for all of these divisions is when you've got a central power making one-size-fits-all decisions for everybody, it tends to make most people frustrated and unhappy, and we tend to fall out of love, not only with our country, but with each other.
One of the concepts that is throughout this book, and you use it to discuss the way we currently and in some ways should approach various issues, is the idea of small platoons versus big institutions and bureaucracies. You use it in talking about the influence you could have in meeting and becoming friends with other families when your kids were at a small school and then trying to connect and make any changes when they went to a big high school. It was really, really hard to do, and you kind of extrapolate that to the policy and political levels. Talk about the advantages of addressing things on the smaller scale and what that looks like in terms of running our country.
Whether you're looking at businesses or organizations or the government itself, the real innovation, the solutions tend to come from the ground up. And America was built that way. We were built from the ground up. We were a very decentralized country from the very beginning. The whole point of the Constitution was to keep us that way with a very limited federal government and a vibrant competitive system between the states. And as that has changed over the years, so has our prosperity. And as Edmund Burke talked about, and this was 200 years ago but still relevant today, that the beginning of public affection, which we would translate into love of country or patriotism, are these little platoons in our lives, that our families, the church groups, the charities we work with, the small businesses where we have jobs. I mean, that's where not only the aspects of our country that work come from, but it also creates affection for each other and our country as a whole. That doesn't come from the top down. But as we become more like big, centrally planned European countries, America is losing its uniqueness, and we are losing a lot of the things that made us great and prosperous in the first place. But most of the book, Greg, is about little platoons still at work all over the country, creating better schools, developing our energy on private lands, even figuring out how to insure themselves without insurance companies for health care. And these examples of success are all around us. But the federal government continues to try to replace them, to punish them, to create incentives to do things the wrong way, in spite of all the evidence that what's working in America is still coming from the ground up.
You mentioned at the very beginning of the book, sir, why you decided to resign from the Senate to take the job at the Heritage Foundation, and it was because as much progress as you were making politically in terms of where the country stood, things were not that much different. You talk about the debt, you talk about the explosive growth of government, regulations, and that sort of thing. Is there a point where it's too far in that direction to reverse? Obviously, given the optimism of the book, you don't believe we've reached that point yet, but how close are we, and how plausible is it to head back in the direction you're advocating here?
Greg, an intellectual analysis of where we are would say we're probably past the tipping point, and technically it's going to be very difficult to turn around. That's my head analysis. But my heart analysis is that I know that the spirit of freedom still runs deep within the hearts of millions and millions of Americans. And I also know that this country has been blessed by God, it's in His hands, and that spiritual revival is still very possible in our country to turn things around. And so I'm hopeful because we've got a better chance of turning our country around than our founders did winning a war of independence against Britain. the odds have been against us before. We can turn it around, but only if people understand what's wrong. If they continue to think, well, the Democrats aren't doing it right in Washington, now let's try the Republicans' version of national education or national health care. It doesn't matter who's in charge. I pointed out in the book the country is too big to manage, and it was never intended to manage all the things it's doing in Washington. So if people will understand that original idea that was called federalism, it's a very confusing word because it sounds like more federal government, but it's the opposite, of letting the states compete, 50 states, for the best schools, the best health care system, the best energy development system, and the federal government focus on making sure that we're secure, that our defenses are strong, to make sure there's justice throughout the land. But we can't manage schools and health care and all of our energy development from Washington, and we're not doing it very well right now.
One silver lining that you point to in the book is policies enacted by conservative governors in many different states. You talk about Snyder in Michigan, Walker in Wisconsin, the former governor of Indiana, Mitch Daniels, Bobby Jindal down in Louisiana. Is it going to be possible, given the right electoral outcomes, to see some of that approach brought to the national level, or is it going to take a lot more than just winning elections?
Well, I think this election could be key in recognizing that people want something different. They want things turned around, but not for Republicans to run education from Washington any more than Democrats do. But look at what Jindal's doing in Louisiana. Look at what they've done in Florida with more choices. And look at the fact that the children who benefit the most are often poor minority children, the ones that they said that choice would hurt. So we haven't been told the truth, and we've been told that if we develop energy in our country, it'll pollute the environment. When we've seen in North Dakota, not only does it not pollute the environment, but we bring up natural gas that's less polluting than oil or coal, creates thousands and thousands of jobs and more tax revenue. If people look at the evidence, they'll see what happens when you go to the left and you can see Detroit, clear as day. Or you can look at states like Texas that have trimmed down government and lowered their taxes and developed their energy and done lawsuit reform. So that's what we're pointing out in the book, is that the answers are all around us, and we don't have to win all the battles in Washington. We just have to move the battles out of Washington and let the states compete. And once we do that, I think you're going to see America return very quickly.
We're talking with Jim DeMint. The book is Falling in Love with America Again. And on the topic you mentioned a little while ago about a spiritual revival, you also talked about small platoons. There's no more functional and fundamental small platoon than the American family. And you spend a lot of time here talking about how no-fault divorce and other policies have eroded the American family. And that, of course, has led to a great deal of poverty in this country. You also, of course, take time to point out why defending specifically traditional marriage is so critical. Elaborate on that just a little bit, and why that's an absolutely essential point in your estimation in order to get America back to where it should be.
Unfortunately, the government, in their attempt to help the poor, have actually created more poverty, broken up families, and by doing that, created intergenerational poverty and many other social pathologies of drug use, high school dropouts, incarceration. A lot of that comes straight from broken families. And we don't need to sit in judgment of people. I grew up in a home with a single mom. But we don't need to arrange our charitable welfare programs in a way that mean that someone can get, a mother can get help if she doesn't have a husband in the home. And so we discourage marriage and family formation, and we seem to be doing everything at the federal level we can to discredit the traditional family, which all the statistics show you that if a child grows up in a home with a mom and dad, they have the best chance of succeeding and very little chance of ever living in poverty, despite where they started. So people need to stop looking at the political labels and just look at what's actually happening in our country, where families stay intact. And I know that's tough. I've been married 40 years. We've had four kids, four grandkids. I mean, it's hard to make it work. But when it does, it creates the best environment for children, but also the communities that you live in.
Former South Carolina Republican Senator Jim DeMint is now president and CEO at the Heritage Foundation. His book is Falling in Love with America Again. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.